Coming up on Tech News Today, Twitter is taking the U.S. government to court. Also, Facebook gets even more serious about false news. YouTube raises the bar for creators looking to monetize their channel. And Uber's promise of upfront pricing might not be so upfront after all. All that and more coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1741, recorded Thursday, April 6th, 2017.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process. It's completely online at quickenloans.com/TNT.
And by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter promo code TNT to receive a free Tracker Bravo with any purchase.
Welcome to Tech News Today, your home for today's technology news. Really the only home for today's technology news. Yeah, welcome home. I'm Megan Maroney.
I'm Jason Howell. Make sure you take your shoes off at the door, though, because I don't know.
We've been making them take their shoes off for ages. I think it's fine. There's a lot
That's why the carpets are still white.
It's true. All right.
That's what you do.
Okay.
Okay. And also, don't remove the plastic sheeting from all of the couches and the chairs. Mm-hmm. It's there for a reason. Mm-hmm. Twitter and politics have been buddies these past few years, for better or for worse. And now those worlds are colliding even further. Twitter filed a lawsuit against the United States government in response to demands by the Department of Homeland Security that were to reveal the true identity behind the @alt_USCIS Twitter account. Twitter warns that unmasking the account would have a chilling effect on free speech and that the request is actually unlawful. First Amendment, of course, protects users who would post something that is critical of the government, let's say, on a service like Twitter. And that's what they're pushing back on. The account apparently was very critical about the Trump administration, one, but also very revealing about U.S. immigration policies.
Okay, so my first question about this story is they sent their requests for the user's information via fax.
So people
use fax machines?
Well, you know, from what I understand, Donald Trump is not a fan of the internet. And I don't say that jokingly. Like, he's actually, from what I understand, he's not a big-time user of electronic communications online. Maybe this is an extension of that. I honestly don't know. Maybe fax is just the way they do it.
Well, the other way they did it by fax was they demanded it by March 13th. And yet they sent the fax on March 14th.
So time travel is required.
Yes. Okay, but all joking aside, the First Amendment, I believe, protects anonymous free speech. It should and it does. And so they weren't threatening. This account wasn't threatening. I found this on the EFF. This was from McIntyre versus Ohio Election Commission. Anonymity is a shield from the tyranny of the majority. It thus exemplifies the purpose behind the Bill of Rights and the First Amendment in particular to protect unpopular individuals from retaliation at the hand of an intolerant society. So let's
hear
that
on a shirt.
You do. I do want that on a shirt. I want it on a laptop sticker is what I want.
Right.
I think good on Twitter for doing this. Twitter and free speech, it's confusing because they're their own platform. Like they can, you know, if they take someone off the platform, that's their choice. You know, it's not necessarily a violation of free speech if they say, like, here's our community rules and you're not obeying them. But, you know, they're allowed to say to the government, like, no, this person, this whoever has this account deserves to be anonymous. They're not doing anything that's against our rules.
Right. What happens if and when Twitter, you know, when it's realized that Twitter is forced to give over because of critical words that a Twitter account had on their feed is forced to give over the names, the addresses, the phone numbers. And, you know, apparently this was accompanied with a threat of sanctions against Twitter, if they weren't compliant to the request. So that's why we are where we are right now. Apparently the Department of Homeland Security had no public comment, as I'm sure they don't comment about these sorts of things while they're active. But Twitter has repeatedly been, or at least very recently, been very good at pushing back against the thought or the idea of its service being used in as a way to surveil. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of an extension of that.
Yeah.
Big time extension, actually, when they filed the lawsuit.
Right. I mean, that's one thing that they've always stood for, yeah. Free speech. They've always, and that is why that we've encountered so many of the problems where people have been violent and hateful and abusive and harassing, because this is all in honor of free speech. We're not going to, you know, we're going to allow people to say these things. I think this case is very interesting because aside from like the Apple case or other like WhatsApp cases, when you're dealing with encryption and, mm-hmm. and a government saying, hey, turn over this information, and, you know, Facebook or Apple saying, we don't have that information. It's encrypted. Twitter, in fact, has that information. They know who opened this account. I mean, they do have some information. So, you know, they have to stand up and say, no, we're not going to turn it over to you.
Right. Go Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Facebook's new artificial intelligence tool to combat fake news isn't AI at all. Instead, it's an educational campaign designed to help you spot fake news. To start, the new tool will show up at the top of the news feed for Facebook users in 14 countries. They might even pay fact checkers to get things right. In an interview in the Financial Times regarding fake news, Facebook Vice President Adam Mosseri says, we're against it and want to take it seriously. It's a large problem, predates Facebook, predates the internet. Now, of course, this is a far cry from CEO Mark Zuckerberg's assertion just 5 months ago, just back in November, that when he said to think that fake news on Facebook had any influence on the election or anything else was, quote, a pretty crazy idea. So I think he has come around. They're taking a multi-prong approach. They're also using signals in addition mm-hmm. to these guides. They're not getting rid of the fake news, or they're not flagging things necessarily as fake news. Basically, they're saying we should be skeptical.
Yeah, educating the users so that that actually helps people out, not only in just making Facebook a place that, you know, that is, I don't know, more conducive to sharing actual information instead of fake information. But that also extends outside of Facebook too, right? Educating the user is valuable all over the internet in this regard, because fake, or actually as Facebook calls it, false news. They chose not to go with fake news, because I think we could all agree fake news as a terminology has been very politicized at this point.
Mm-hmm. And Google's demonstrably inaccurate information just rolls off.
They went the Microsoft route.
Yes.
And it gave it a really long name, complicated name. But again, good on Facebook for doing its part here. Although the page that comes up on how to spot fake news is informative and instructive. It's pretty long. Like, if someone actually clicks that to be like, oh, what is this? You get this like wall of text, and
right.
That might just turn some people off.
Yeah,
but
all I want to put puppy pictures. Yeah, and I mean, I just think again and again, it's like, be skeptical. Which, relating to our last story, these alt government Twitter accounts. That's the other side of that story. I'm not saying any of them are true. They're really, that's complicated. The idea of these, I think you should be skeptical of everything you see on mm-hmm. the internet, including those, you know, those like alt National Park Service or alt like that. We don't know.
Who knows who they are?
Yeah, who knows? Really. That is the other side of the anonymity. You don't know who to believe. I mean, Facebook is less anonymous. So that's kind of what helps spread the fake news faster. You're like, oh, well, that came from my cousin. It must be true.
Right. I better read it.
Mm-hmm.
YouTube is cracking down on which creators can actually make money by hosting their content on the platform. Going forward, monetization for a channel won't be possible until that channel has more than 10,000 lifetime views. Now, prior to this, anyone could start a channel and monetize it from the get-go. YouTube says the threshold now provides enough insight into the channel to verify that it's following YouTube's community guidelines. New creators can actually apply for the YouTube Partner Program. They have to apply. And then once they hit 10,000 views on the channel, they can then choose to be evaluated. And, if YouTube deems the channel worthy of making money, then the switch is flipped and you can start having ads appear over the top of your videos.
So do you think this is bad for creators, like the independent creators? You think it's going to make it harder?
I mean, it makes it harder for someone who's just starting out. At the same time, you're probably not making a lot of money off of the content you're putting on YouTube if you're less than 10,000 total views. So I think that that's a pretty good number to set it at, right? Like it's high enough that someone will have to kind of prove themselves to a certain degree and really kind of get familiar with the terms that YouTube plays by, and low enough that a lot of people, I'm sure, can reach that eventually and start to kind of generate some income from there. Really, when it boils down to it, this is, I think, a way that puts YouTube hands-on with a lot of the content that's coming through so that they can avoid what we've been talking about the last couple of weeks, which is the fact that ads were appearing on top of videos that, questionable material, let's say. Mm-hmm. What this basically says is, do those channels, are they following the terms that YouTube puts out as far as kind of like the right way to present, material to the community? Are they following the community guidelines? And if it's a hateful, video, it probably wouldn't follow those rules. And therefore, okay, they have the ability to recognize that and choose to not throw that switch so that they don't make money off of that content. Mm-hmm.
It makes sense, because a lot of these, the press that dug up these videos that were hateful and had ads, extremist videos, like, the press had to do some digging to find it.
Right.
It wasn't like they were just, any random person, they would just show up in your YouTube video. So, mm-hmm. It was wrong that they were being matched up this way, that, YouTube was making money off of these extremist videos. But I do think maybe this is the right answer. I'm not, an individual YouTube creator, so I don't know. If you are and you have something to say about this, if this feels like it's good for you, it's a good number, or if it really is going to stop creators, just email us at tnt@twit.tv.
Yeah, let
us
know what you think. Very curious to hear what some creators feel, because I'm sure some creators are like, they're below that threshold. It's like, oh, great, that number could seem like a mountain to mm-hmm. to some, because it's actually very hard to get subscribes and likes, as you hear at the end of every YouTube video. Mm-hmm. Don't forget to like and subscribe. You're going to hear that a lot more now, I bet, coming from new creators who are just trying to reach that threshold so that they can potentially become the next big moneymaker on YouTube with their mm-hmm. content.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of interesting content,
this is how we're going to make our money.
We are. We're going freelance. The Clips app from Apple is out. We did a hands-on review with it in the office. I think before we talk about it, we should just take a look at our personal creation that we made.
And here it is.
So this becomes a Raspberry Tor, which will anonymize all of your data through the Tor network.
Are you going?
Yes.
Okay. This is a sheet of sticker paper. This says Bert Chat. And what you do is you take the sticker paper, pull the Bert Chat sticker off, and put it on your forehead.
Please help me. I've been turned into a cartoon.
Oh, man, that was amazing. Top notch video content there. 10,000 views guaranteed on YouTube.
We should not quit our day jobs at all. Okay, so that was the free app.
We should not get into video because... Wait a minute.
I also made this with my dog.
Okay.
So it took about 30 seconds, not the hours of time that our editors and that Brian puts into these shows.
It's almost as good.
I don't know.
Okay, I'm kidding.
So you saw that we were trying to use I was trying to figure out the tool where you speak and then it captions your words, and it did that on
my video, and it did
sure,
it on yours.
Yeah, I think I had it did it better on mine because I was talking very slowly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the Clips app, it's free. It's only on iOS for now. It's like Snapchat, but how people like me use Snapchat, because I don't use Snapchat as a social network. Like, sometimes I'll post things to my story, but I don't really look at other people's stories. I just like mm-hmm. to use the filters and then post them on the social networks where I feel more comfortable, like Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. I think that's what they're doing with Clips. It's not a social network. It's just create something and then easily share it.
And it creates it in a square video, I noticed. What do you do with a square video?
Yeah, what do you?
I mean, seriously. I don't have a square TV at home, but I guess you're not watching these on
No,
your TV.
You're just sharing them and it makes it super easy to share. Like, it's just as soon as when you hit the share sheet, all of your regular contacts in, iMessage come up. So it's really trying to turn iMessage into Snapchat.
Oh, okay. That's fun. Well, they're all doing that nowadays. Maybe I guess Apple should be allowed to get in on that party.
Maybe someday you'll get it on your Android.
Well, I wasn't going to ask that question because I think the answer is probably going to be no. But I would like to have, I actually do think that it's a pretty cool feature that it can automatically transcribe the words mm-hmm. that you're saying. That's actually a really nice feature. Because I mean, I find on social media a lot of times, right? Like you're scrolling through your feed, you don't have your headphones in, it's late at night, so you're not going to listen to these videos that start auto-playing. But when they add those automatic, you know, when they add the subtitles down below, like sometimes I'll catch myself, like I've been watching this thing for 5 minutes and totally just reading the subtitles mm-hmm. and like I wouldn't have watched this otherwise if that wasn't there. It's neat that it does it for you because that's actually a pretty time consuming thing to have to edit in after the fact.
That's true.
That's yeah. pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Use it on your iPad.
Okay, I will. I have to remember to use the iPad. Microsoft unleashed the specs of its next big console, Scorpio, and it's a beast that's not merely an iterative update to the Xbox One, but could be considered, and some consider it, a full-blown next-generation system that will also play existing Xbox 360 and Xbox One games. Time for a specs roll call. 8 custom x86 cores at 2.3 gigahertz, 40 AMD GPU cores, 12 gigs of GDDR5 memory at 326 gigs per second, a 1 terabyte hard drive, and 4K Ultra HD capable Blu-ray. All specs here top anything currently on the market by a fair amount. So, you know, it's an impressive workhorse. We aren't really going to dive into it too deeply here because we did hear from Sam Moscovich from Ars Technica, who's on tomorrow, and he's like, oh, you got to save the Scorpio for me because mm-hmm. I've got thoughts. He's going to dive into that deep tomorrow.
Yeah, I'd like to know why do you need this? how much he thinks it's going to cost?
Yeah.
I mean, fall, available in the fall, but when?
Right.
Yeah,
he seems to have thoughts on how this will apply to virtual reality and a whole bunch mm-hmm. of other things. So he'll be on tomorrow to talk all about it. But I do think this is very interesting because it seems like Sony with the PlayStation 4 and, you know, kind of some of the follow-ups to this, like it seems like the general trend, or at least it was thought that the general trend was that this next generation was going to be like a half generation, yet this thing seems to leapfrog pretty far ahead. So we'll see where it settles.
Mm-hmm. Well, after the break, ever wondered how much of what you pay for a ride actually goes to the Uber driver? It's harder to find out than you think. We'll explore why after the break, but first let's take a minute to thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, the sponsor of this episode. Having just gone through the process of getting a new mortgage, I can tell you that it is as Byzantine as it gets of any of the industries that need disruption. This is one of them. And Rocket Mortgage to the rescue. With Rocket Mortgage, you'll get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence to make an informed decision. Rocket Mortgage can verify your income, your credit, all your assets, and your property valuations, and they can do that all digitally the way that we like to get things done. So don't waste time searching through stacks of paperwork. With Rocket Mortgage, you can securely share your financial information to get a mortgage approval in just minutes. You can adjust the rate and the length of your loan in real time to make sure you get the mortgage solution that's right for you. Whether you're looking to buy a home or refinance your existing mortgage, you can lift the burden of getting a home loan with Rocket Mortgage. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/TNT. That's quickenloans.com/TNT. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support. Part of the secret of Uber's success, beyond running roughshod over regulations, is its algorithm. So it's not surprising that they keep it very secret. So much so that it's hard to know if how much of a cut Uber is taking from what you pay and what the drivers get. And some suspect they've lengthened the time between the end of a ride and when a driver sees what they earn from that ride in order to keep drivers and passengers from comparing. Allison Griswold, reporter at Quartz, has done some digging into this, and she's here to tell us what she found. Welcome back to the show, Allison.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So in some ways, this story starts way back in 2014 when Uber was still new in Brooklyn, where you live. Tell us what you discovered on one of your first rides and how you discovered it.
Well, it was actually, so Uber Pool came about in 2014, but I only discovered this, I don't know, a couple of months ago. So what happened was I was in a car with a couple other people, and we were talking about how much our fares were. And then at the end, I asked the driver if I could stick around and see what he got paid. And once it popped up, which took a couple minutes, we both noticed that something weird was that Uber had charged me, it was like $11.46, but it had told the driver that my fare was $10 and change. And so that was just weird because in theory it should have been the same, but it wasn't.
So not what they were getting, but what they were told you paid was not what you actually paid.
Well, right, right. What the driver saw as my fare was not what I had paid. Yes.
Are drivers normally okay with the question, I'm going to stick around and tell me what you end up getting paid on the back end? I think you're very brave for asking that.
Well, I'm a reporter, you know, it's my job to ask those questions.
I'm just surprised that they said, yeah, sure.
Well, a lot of drivers, I think a lot of drivers are happy to talk about what they make.
Yeah.
It's sort of a pain point for a lot of them. And
oh, that's true.
It's almost nice for them to know that the customer is interested. But, you know, if they don't want to tell you, they'll just say no.
Right.
So was this after they introduced upfront pricing or was this before when you asked them, when you compared?
This was after they introduced upfront pricing. And upfront pricing is this system Uber rolled out last year where basically when you book an Uber, you get a price upfront. That's why they call it that. And then, so basically it would say, you're going from Manhattan to Brooklyn. This ride will be $15.50. If that's okay, you hit confirm and then you book the ride. But it used to be that you would just see if there was surge pricing. So it would say surge is in effect and you're going to pay 1.4 times the price or there would be no surge. But now they give you the dollar value.
So have they done away with surge pricing? Is that not a thing anymore?
Well, there's still surge pricing, but the difference is that now you don't see the multiplier. So a better way to think of it is just dynamic pricing in that Uber's prices are always changing from one minute to the next. Like you might have done this if you just open your app and you put in a destination, it will pop up with a price. And then if you do it 5 minutes later, it will probably give you a different price.
Now, you mentioned in your article that prior to the kind of switch to upfront pricing, drivers were used to seeing a very immediate calculation of their earnings at the end of a trip, but that once the switch actually happened, it's almost they right away they saw some sort of a delay, and that kind of has had some people concerned, like why now suddenly is there this delay, almost as if there's some tabulation calculation happening in the background. It shouldn't be that difficult to figure out. It's upfront pricing after all. How does Uber account for that delay?
Yeah, so it's weird. Basically, a bunch of drivers said, you know, they switched to the upfront pricing and we've started to notice it takes time between when we finish the ride and when they tell us what we made. And Uber sort of says, well, you know, you pay us an upfront price that we agree on, but to figure out what the driver makes, we have to base it on the actual trip, which is where you're seeing these discrepancies. So if you pay $15 for a ride, but then say there's not as much traffic as Uber thought, or the driver takes a faster route, and maybe they get you there so that the meter only hits about $12, then the driver gets paid out of that $12 fare is the difference. And so with the delay, it makes it harder for sort of a rider and a driver to compare because maybe the driver has to move on to a new trip or the rider's in a rush. And so the drivers are sort of concerned that that might have been a deliberate thing that Uber did.
Yeah, I think that's the same with surge pricing. I think, you know, economists, I read what an economist had to say about this. It's just, it's uncomfortable for people. It's not so much that we don't like paying that much. It's like not knowing why we're paying that much is part of the problem. And I think it reflects a little bit on Uber, although they're just, I mean, like you say in your piece, their algorithm is so complicated and it's secret for a reason because they don't want anyone copying it. And they make very little on each ride, right?
Mm-hmm. Uber is any ride hailing company is a classic sort of high volume, low margin business in that they don't make a lot on each trip, but they do so many trips that it adds up. And so what that means is that if you can make a single trip even a tiny bit more lucrative than it was before, that becomes incredibly valuable very quickly because it just gets multiplied so many times.
Are competitors more transparent about this sort of thing? Are they more upfront with this stuff?
So a couple of drivers I talked to said that Lyft still gives you your earnings right away as soon as you complete the trip. Unlike Uber, there's no delay. But Lyft has switched to sort of an upfront pricing system on a lot of its rides, like Uber does.
Well, you had another piece today on Lyft's new funding. What's the biggest takeaway there with the funding they got?
Well, Lyft, Lyft is always sort of like the kid tagging along behind Uber. They had the same idea. They started around the same time, but Uber got all the money because it was really aggressive and moved fast.
The kid with the mustache. Yeah.
the kid with the bright pink mustache. And so I think it's hard to know how long this fundraising has been going on. And it certainly has probably predated a lot of the stuff with Uber, but I don't know. But it just speaks to the fact that Lyft has really capitalized on all of Uber's struggles for the last couple of months. You know, every time Uber does something, Lyft has been there to quietly say, hey, we don't do this, or we do this better, and that's why you should give us your business. And the biggest impact you saw was after the whole delete Uber thing happened in January. And the New York Times reported that it was like 500,000 people tried to delete their Uber accounts, just sent the request to delete it. And Lyft said it gained 5% market share during that time.
Wow. Hmm. So is there a good way to tell if Uber is overcharging you for the ride?
Yeah. So the way would basically be to do what I did, right? And to say, hey, to your driver, what are you seeing as my fare for this trip? I'm curious. I'd like to know if I'm paying more than you're getting paid out of. And that sort of, I guess, depends on your comfort level, but that would be the way to do it.
And then wait around until you both got that the email that said how much both of you, how much money was exchanged during that transaction, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for joining us. Allison Griswold is a reporter at Quartz covering the sharing economy and other startup-y things. She is at Allison Griswold on Twitter. That's with one L. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you, Allison.
Thank you.
Have a good night. All right, feedback time. Last week, we actually got a voicemail from a viewer. This doesn't happen a lot, but it happens every once in a while. Didn't leave his name, but we're going to take a listen right now.
Hey, guys. Today, I was watching the news about Congress overturning the FCC rules that were going to go into place. And so I decided to give my ISP, Comcast, a call. Unfortunately, they didn't really know what I was talking about when I asked them if I could restrict my privacy a little more. So sad that they're not aware what's going on. Thanks.
I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised calling in, to say, hey, please peel back on sharing all of my stuff, everyone, okay?
Yeah.
Didn't work. It seems like the kind of thing that they really want you to jump through hurdles in order to do. So I don't think that they're going to make it as easy as that. Although that would be pretty awesome, right? Instead of having to go through the console and check all the boxes of all the 60 whatever ad networks that I'm sharing with when I looked at it a couple of weeks ago, to just call them and be like, you know what? I don't want to do that anymore. You figure it out. I don't care what you have to do. Just figure it out.
Right.
Okay.
But what the viewer was saying is they didn't even know what he was talking about.
Right. Like, I know.
And that this was last week. It was that day, I think, that he sent this. But, I keep talking about Sonic. They are a sponsor. Nate was calling them to see because he was thinking about getting Sonic, I guess. And he asked them and they knew what he was talking about. He's like, they weren't like, they didn't, couldn't quote the bill or anything like that, but they're like, oh, are you talking about this? Yes. No, we don't share your information.
Yeah. I mean, companies like Sonic or Monkey Brains or whatever, the ISPs that whose business is very much ingrained in this idea of privacy, probably, I mean, because it's so important to their business model. Yeah. They're probably going to instruct their CSRs to know a little bit more about that. Who knows where, companies as large as Comcast have call centers all around the world. Who knows how connected they are to the U.S. politics? Many times they have a computer system with a set of scripts and it's very isolated to fixing technical problems or whatever the case may be. I'm not that surprised that Comcast wouldn't have that in their system, mm-hmm. or the CSRs wouldn't be educated around those talking points. They probably don't want the CSRs to really touch that stuff.
Yeah. When I called Sprint the other day, the woman I spoke to said I had a lovely name. And then she said I had a lovely voice.
And then she said lovely like 24 yes. times.
But it's like, even though I knew it was a script, it still felt good.
Yeah, it felt good. Good. Street art feels good sometimes. That didn't work.
It's lovely. Lovely.
Sorry, I had to try. And we'll talk about something along those lines. But first, let's take a minute to thank Tracker, the sponsor of this episode. So you've cut it too close. Workout, shower. You sent off a couple of work emails. I do that all the time. Breakfast, I think I have all the time in the world. Caught 2 seconds in the news. Maybe a little bit more than that. I don't know. A laptop in the bag. Just enough time to make it out to work, and then you turn around to try and lock the front door, and you can't go anywhere because you don't have your keys. I've definitely been there. We've all been there in one way or another. Now with Tracker, you never have to worry about losing your things again. The Tracker Bravo is a coin-sized device constructed with anodized aluminum for the thinnest, most durable tracking. You can locate misplaced keys, wallets, bags, computers in seconds. Just pair Tracker to your smartphone, attach it to any item, and find its precise location with the tap of a button. If you happen to lose your phone, kind of works in the opposite direction, you can press the button on the Tracker device, or you can even ask your Amazon Echo, and your phone will ring even if it was left on silent. Your phone can track up to 10 devices at one time through Tracker, and family sharing lets you track the same Tracker Bravo from multiple phones. Customize two-way separation alerts, so you're notified before you leave your item behind. With over 4.5 million devices shipped, Tracker has the largest crowd GPS network in the world, so your lost item shows up on a map, even if it happens to be miles away. The Tracker app records its last known location. Then when another Tracker user comes within a 100-foot range of your item, you'll receive a GPS update of where your item is located. The distance indicator on the Tracker app will show you if you're getting closer to your items. It's like, hot potato, hot, you know, getting closer, getting closer. And with a 30-day money-back guarantee, there's no reason not to give it a try. So stop losing your stuff today. Go to thetracker.com and enter promo code TNT. You'll get a free Tracker Bravo with any order. That's thetracker.com. Promo code TNT for your free Tracker Bravo with any order. And we thank Tracker for their support.
TNT's fan of the day is John Reynolds on Twitter, who sent us this picture of TNT atop a treadmill.
Because this is how you get fit.
That is how you get fit. What? How long is he? 47 something, 11, 13 something. A little blurry, 55.
11.13 distance. I don't know if that's miles or centimeters. I don't know.
But yes. Awesome. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. I bet a lot of you guys exercise.
55 minutes. 55 minutes was at the bottom.
Yeah.
So that's the important thing.
Yes. I think it's a good workout if you start at the beginning of the show and you never really know how long it's going to be.
Yeah.
So it's like, you just have to keep running.
Some days we give you a break. Days we're like, you know what? Take it easy. It's been a 30-minute workout. Mm-hmm. It's okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We know when you need to stop working out. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup. Exercising pictures welcome, as are pictures of pets always. Posted on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, Facebook, or whatever social network you choose. Use the hashtag HowIWatchTNT and we will find it.
All right. Academic research that will be presented at the British Sociological Association's annual conference in Manchester shows that graffiti might be lessening, at least in the streets of Britain, as artists are shifting their work toward legal walls. So, you know, there's the illegal walls, which we're used to seeing graffiti everywhere in places that it's not meant to be. And then there are walls that where graffiti is allowed. Well, they're shifting their graffiti to these legal walls, and then they share that art out on social media to build their reputation without the hassle of, you know, all that trespassing and bodily injury due to a fast-moving train. But apparently, like, it's actually changing the amount of graffiti in the city, based on this research.
I want no one to get hit by a fast-moving train. I want that for no one. But it's sad to me that graffiti might be dying. So I think we should go tag some bridges just to keep it alive, you and me.
What's your tag?
I don't know. I can't give it away. Then if you saw it, then I'd get arrested.
My tag is TNT.
Okay.
No, not very creative. I could have come up with something better. Burke's tag Oh, Burke says Megan's tag is lovely.
Oh, thank you.
But it would
thank
be, you. But it would be like L-O-V-L-Y. The, yes. the E wouldn't be there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Something like
mm-hmm.
that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't know. I found this kind of interesting in the sense that, you know, like Banksy, very, very mm-hmm. well-known graffiti artist. He can post. Is it he or she? Do we actually know Banksy, he or she? Anyways, because identity
be
is unknown.
I could be
You
Banksy.
Could be.
I could be.
I've just assumed that he's that it's a guy, but mm-hmm.
you would assume that.
Yeah, I know, right? anyways, Banksy can feature graffiti artists on the Facebook page, and that will blow up their reputation mm-hmm. and kind of make a name for them. So, I mean, social media is like this amazing place to spread your reputation far and wide, farther than probably a wall in one localized city could do.
Right.
But then there's also kind of the socioeconomic aspect of this, which is that yes, people with money, enough money on with which to, you know, have regular access to the internet and computer in order to spread this out and all that kind of stuff, probably can do that over someone who's maybe of a lower socioeconomic status that, you know, I mean, that's graffiti has long been a way for people in that position to kind of express themselves and everything. So
the art of the people.
Yeah. I think graffiti is pretty cool. So I would hate to see it go away for good.
Mm-hmm. Except for on my house. I don't necessarily.
Yeah. Don't put it on Megan's house.
Yeah.
Or my house. Or really anyone's house. You know what? Don't do graffiti on houses.
Okay,
that's
Dad.
That's mean. Don't do that. There's plenty of big walls to put it on that don't belong to a random person. There we go. I'm done. Soapbox off. TNT records live every Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv. Leave us a short voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW and find us on Twitter. We're at Tech News Today TV.
Subscribe to this show on iTunes or Google Play or wherever you get your podcasts. You can find all the ways at twit.tv/TNT. Leave a review if you like the show or if you don't like a show. If you like the show, it helps people find it. If you don't like the show, it helps people not find us.
Thanks.
And if you don't like the show, why are you still listening? If you want to tweet at me and let me know the answer to that question, I'm at Megan Maroney.
And I'm at Jason Howell. Thanks to Brian Burnett, of course, for the technical direction and all sorts of other digital-y things. Thanks to Burke for helping out. Burke Chat, sometimes thumbs up, sometimes words on a card, and sometimes just a beard in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And thanks to Kevin for editing the show, as always, except for Mondays. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Bye, everybody.